You know, this was the most random game that I've seen in a very long time. Drew Locke led the Seattle Seahawks on a 10-play, 92-yard game-winning touchdown drive. And what was so random about it is that before the game even started, we didn't even know who was going to be the starting quarterback for the Seahawks. And then Drew Locke gets the nod over Geno Smith, and he started out a little bit slow, but he got progressively better as the game progressed. And then the fourth quarter, final drive, 3rd and 10, it looks like Seattle's down and out. And then Drew Locke throws a prayer to DK Metcalf. When I first saw the play, I thought it was an incompletion. And then one of my boys would tell me, JT, he caught that. And then after that play, this dude just got a confidence booster. And then he throws a dot to JSN on James Bradbury. Props to Drew Locke on this fantastic performance. All right, this is a dude who got really emotional after the game. And kudos to the reporter on this interview, because she really did a really good job at really savoring the moment. This was a guy in Drew Locke who was drafted out of Missouri in the second round a couple of years ago by the Broncos. And it didn't really work out. He showed a lot of promise in a couple of games his rookie season. But then after that, things just never really materialized for him in Denver. And then he gets to Seattle, right? And all of a sudden, you're with Geno Smith, who has this phenomenal season out of nowhere. And then he kind of gets an extension. Well, he didn't kind of get an extension. He got an extension. And all of a sudden, he's riding back. He was talking about being written off last year and not riding back. Well, he's been riding back in a major way. And I agree with the decision for Pete Carroll before the game to go ahead and give Drew Locke the nod. Geno Smith has not been it. His best performance came against the Dallas Cowboys. Let's see what Drew Locke has. And boy, we saw what he has. Now, I don't know if this is just a one-off performance and then he comes back to reality next week. But this was one of those moments in the NFL that you just have to cherish and love it for what it was at that moment. For Drew Locke after the game to tear up the way he did, having to go through not really working out in Denver, coming to Seattle and getting another opportunity, and being able to step up in the biggest moment of the game, delivering a 10-play, 92-yard touchdown pass. Drew Locke, congratulations to you, man. And him getting emotional after the game definitely was something that I saw coming. Pete Carroll is one of those coaches that does a great job at motivating his players. And I don't know what the hell he told Geno Smith before the start of last season. And I don't know what the fuck he told Drew Locke before this game started, but it worked. Pete Carroll has to be one of the greatest motivators in the history of coaches. This dude knows how to get the best out of players. Just look at some of the other players that they've had in the past. This is kind of like the island of misfit toys. This man takes players that kind of have some crazy personalities like Jamal Adams and DK Metcalf. Hell, he had Richard Sherman, who we all know how big of a character he is. And he was able to win championships with them, including Russell Wilson. So this dude does a fantastic job at finding ways to build a great culture in the locker room. Drew Locke, the majority of his interview after this game was nothing but mostly praising his teammates, praising the guys who he had around him, the guys who came through and helped make the plays to give him this moment. Now for Seattle, they're cooked. They're done. Jalen Hurts, ever since Philadelphia gave this dude that extension, he's regressed. And this game was the worst performance that he's had all season long. He lost this game for Philadelphia. You know the narrative floating around there that Jalen Hurts can't read defense as well? To me, it looked true tonight. He threw two really awful interceptions, including the last one, to finally seal the win for Seattle. I don't know what the hell he was thinking, trying to throw that prayer downfield, but he knew he ain't have enough arm strength to make that throw. And I never viewed Jalen Hurts as a legitimate MVP candidate anyway. There's people who still have him as a betting favorite to win MVP, he's pretty high in the odds. Like, he shouldn't have no odds anymore, man. This dude's played this season. He's been able to elevate his game in the fourth quarter, but he's played really shitty in the first three quarters of games. And this was one of those games where he'd never played well at any point of it, outside of the first drive that they had. That was it. I like Jalen Hurts, and I'm still very high on him as a quarterback, but this is a down year. I don't want to hear no excuses about injuries because everybody's playing through injuries. We're going into week 10 of the NFL season, people. Nobody's playing at 100%. Philly, their defense, oh my God. You talk about a fall from grace. And not too many people were really that high on Jonathan Gannon as a defensive coordinator. Well, ever since he left for Arizona, this defense has been atrocious. James Bradbury, Darius Slay, giving these dudes extensions was a terrible idea by Howie. And he normally makes pretty good decisions, but he should have moved on from them. They're too old, they're washed up, they're slow. James Bradbury is getting cooked by JSN. And there was another wide receiver who broke Darius Slay's ankles a couple of weeks when he had to go on social media and kind of laugh it off. Like, yeah, Darius Slay, like, laugh off the pain. You're not the same cornerback that used to be anymore. This defense is cooked. Like, oh my goodness. They're so bad that they gave up play calling duties to Matt Patricia. Like, did Nick Sirianni not see the last time Matt Patricia was calling plays on defense when he was the head coach of the Detroit Lions? I remember one time I was watching the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving one year when Matt Patricia was the head coach, and they got absolutely embarrassed by Deshaun Watson to the point the Texans were running trick plays on Matt Patricia's defense. There's no way this dude should have been given defensive play calling. He allowed Drew Lock to engineer a 10-play, 92-yard game-winning touchdown. The Eagles are not going to the Super Bowl. I don't even know if they're going to win a playoff game. Hell, with the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks, they might lose to the Bucks. And I'm not trying to be funny. Like, I'm dead serious when I say that. Baker Mayfield, this is going to be a really hot take. Y'all not finna like it, but he's played better than Jalen Hurts this season, at least when it comes to throwing the football. In my opinion, Jalen Hurts has not been that good this year. And I've tried to just ignore his play and give him credit for stepping up in the fourth quarter, but I can't really continue to just act like Jalen Hurts hasn't been as good as what he was last year. He's had some good moments. He's had some big games. But for the most part, the last couple of weeks, he hasn't been that great. And you know, when we all heard David Carr a couple of weeks make those statements that maybe the Eagles should bench Jalen Hurts for Marcus Mariota to allow him to get healthy, that doesn't sound too bad of a take anymore. I mean, you already clinched your playoff spot. If Jalen Hurts is playing this bad when he's throwing interceptions like what he did to end this game, yeah, he may need to sit on the bench for a little bit and get healthy and reevaluate some things. Because it's not looking pretty for Philadelphia. Nick Sirianni, I like Nick Sirianni. I like his character. I like his personality. This dude is always amped up. He's very charismatic. I would love to have an interview with Nick Sirianni. He's very charismatic. But, you know, he says something to Pete Carroll about taking one of his timeouts, and it didn't really sit well to me. And, you know, Drew Lock's 10-play, 92-yard game-winning touchdown drive was pretty much Pete Carroll's middle finger to Nick Sirianni. Like, yeah, what timeout? F you. Like, this dude is a little bit cocky. I be listening to John Middlecoff a lot, who's with the Volume Podcast. And when he brought that point up about Nick Sirianni being a little bit too talkative as a head coach, like, I understand now where he was coming from. It's like, dude, worry about your team. Your secondary's getting cooked. You got Matt Patricia calling plays on defense. Jalen Hurts is cooked. The Eagles look like dead birds right now. It is dead birds down there in Philadelphia, man. I don't even know if they could beat the Buccaneers right now. Honestly, truthfully, do you think the Eagles defense can stop any offense right now? Drew Lock had a game-winning touchdown drive on these guys, man. Darius Slay, James Bradbury, they can't cover a wide receiver to save them souls, especially the younger ones in the league that are really good. Things are starting to fall apart in Philadelphia. They're still a really good team, but they're not playing like one. And the NFL season is never about how you start. It's about how you finish. And after the week of Thanksgiving is over, that's when the pretenders start to separate themselves from the contenders. And the Eagles, they look like a contender at the start of this year, but the more I watch these fools play, getting blown the hell out by Dallas, and you're losing to the Seattle Seahawks, which was supposed to be a get-right game for you, you're starting to look more like pretenders. And at this point, it's probably only one team that you can have 110% confidence in they can make it to the Super Bowl. And that are the 49ers, or that is the San Francisco 49ers. They've looked like the most dominant team in this conference from week one to now, even though they had a little bit of a cold stretch when they went on a losing streak. But then after their bye week, they came back and they smashed the Jaguars, and it's been going up ever since. But you never want to trend down this late into the season. You're making coordinator changes that aren't working out. Your star quarterback is playing like shit after you just paid the man. Like, oh my God. I like Jalen Hurts. I like his leadership. I like his cool, calm demeanor. But it's not looking pretty for that boy right now, man. If it wasn't for all those tush pushes, he wouldn't really be in the MVP conversation statistically. But this was a big win for Seattle. They get themselves right back into the playoff mix, and they really needed this win because their season was looking really brim at one point. They were on a little bit of a losing streak themselves. They lost a close one to Dallas on Thursday night. Like, Seattle, to get this win, maybe this moment out of Drew Lock could be what helps them turn their season around. And I need them to get that seventh seed because I got a $100 bet going that the Rams aren't going to make it to the playoffs. So please, Seattle, please get it done. Get it done. Get it done. This is not the time of year that you want to be giving away $100 free to somebody. Like, the Rams are a good team, but hopefully they lose to the Saints and they get upset by somebody and you can win out. And I believe that you can with the way Drew Lock played, even though Philadelphia's defense is horrid, is old, is ancient. They need to move on from those aging old men that corner. But this was a great moment by Drew Lock, and this could be what sparks the Seattle Seahawks season right back on track. NFL MVP rankings going into week 16. We got to start off with Brock Purdy at number one. Listen, this dude is number one in passing touchdowns right now. He looks damn near unstoppable every single week. There's no way that you can't have Brock Purdy as the front runner for this award right now. There's no other quarterback that's been playing at the level that this dude has for the majority of this year. He had a little bit of a cold stretch when there was injuries to Deebo Samuel and a couple of other of key players on the 49ers offense. But since they've been healthy, this dude has been dominating. I don't think there's nobody else right now that's even anywhere close to winning this award and being number one for it. Number two, though, Josh Allen. Now, he's closing the gap. And remember, Josh Allen had a little bit of a stinker stretch when he was turning the football over. We can't forget that Broncos game, but ever since then, he's been carrying the Buffalo Bills. Yeah, they got a good defense, but their defense isn't really that great late in games. If you remember that Philadelphia Eagles game, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But Josh Allen, this dude has been a monster this year, especially when he's been running the football. This dude be running guys over like he's playing Madden 25. Like, holy shit, you cannot bring this dude down. He scored a touchdown against Kansas City when he dragged their defense into the end zone. People keep saying this dude is a more athletic version of Big Ben Roethlisberger. No, the hell he's not. He's nowhere close to Big Ben. If anything, he's a more jacked up version of Cam Newton. Like, take Cam Newton, but a better throw of the football and way more athletic. That's Josh Allen. This dude, if he can get the Bills into the playoffs and they get the seventh seed, you know, I was saying how the Ravens might be able to win it all this year, but I wouldn't want to see Lamar Jackson coming off a bye against the Buffalo Bills potentially as the seventh seed. If that's going to be the case, I'd rather somebody else get the one seed and have to play Buffalo in the first round. Because if the Ravens have to do it, I'm not so sure they will be able to seek out a win. And the only thing that really has held Josh Allen back is Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow. That's been his two only playoff losses. Patrick Mahomes is down and out. Kadarius Toney, they're still banking on him to live up to his first round ceiling. Like, that's ever going to happen? He does clumsy shit every game. Travis Kelce, he's washed. He's probably going to hit retirement after this season. Like, he's crying, throwing temper tantrums on the sidelines. Mahomes and the Chiefs, they're down this season. Like, people were talking about dynasty with them. And Joe Burrow, he's not even playing this season anymore. He's done too. So now, it's Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson's chances to finally break through and end the narratives about them, about how they can't get it done. Imagine if Josh Allen wins a Super Bowl this year. Do you not know what that would mean for his legacy? People would be hyping up Josh Allen to be just as good as Patrick Mahomes. People already want to do it with Joe Burrow, but they're scared to because he don't have the Super Bowl win. But if Josh Allen takes Buffalo to the Super Bowl and they win it all, he would do something that Jim Kelly could even do. You would have to give him props for that. Like, Josh Allen, the way he's playing right now, he's been arguably the best quarterback in the NFL, not named Brock Purdy. You can't have Josh Allen not in your top three if you're going to do MVP candidates and call yourself an analyst. Come on, man. Number three, Lamar Jackson got to be up here, man. You got to give Lamar his roses. Statistically, he doesn't have the numbers that Brock Purdy and Josh Allen have. But if you watch the Ravens play, this dude makes crazy-ass plays out of his you-know-what. Like against the Jaguars, there was one play when he broke out of a sack from one of their defensive linemen. And then he just said, F it, Isaiah Likely is somewhere downfield. And Isaiah Likely wants his like two defenders. There are plays that Lamar has done this season that no other quarterback in the league is capable of being able to pull off. Lamar Jackson, if we were doing this based on, you know, eye test and how they perform in games and crucial moments, I would have to give it to Lamar, especially with what he does on the ground. But he has definitely improved to a different level when it comes to his ability to throw the football. We haven't seen Lamar Jackson this efficient as a passer ever. And the stats don't really do him justice. If we were to give this award just solely based on eye test and in-game performance, I would have to give it to Lamar. He doesn't have as many interceptions as Josh Allen, and he's had more flashy plays than Brock Purdy. If you're going to give the MVP award to somebody, it has to be somebody that has a little bit of flash and pizzazz in their game. You feel me? And Lamar Jackson, he's already won the award before, but he's number three. Dak Prescott is at number four right now. Boy, they got their you-know-whats kicked against the Buffalo Bills. Like, they kicked the shit out of those boys. And Dak Prescott, he looked terrible in that game. But I'm not going to drop him too low because they still got a chance to not only redeem themselves as a team, but Dak Prescott has a chance to still make a good claim at winning the MVP. Their next two games, they got to play the Dolphins and they got to play the Lions. Dak Prescott balls out in those two games. There's no reason why he can't be in that conversation to win this award because the numbers are there. He's had some bad performances to the 49ers and Brock Purdy did outplay him in that game. But what if the 49ers get outplayed by Lamar Jackson this Christmas? So there's an opening for Dak Prescott to kind of be able to make him a little bit of a small argument for winning MVP this year. At five, I got Christian McCaffrey. CMC has been the best running back in the NFL. I saw a tweet from former Steelers running back Rashard Mendenhall, right? And he said something about how he doesn't like how, like, all these analysts who were mid-football players out of white have been talking down on other black players in the league, and we need to have, like, a black versus white 7-on-7 game or something in the Pro Bowl to see who wins. And he said, I'm your goat. Like, no, you're not, bro. Like, you were a mid-running back for Pittsburgh. You was averaging 3.9 yards per carry with over 300 damn carries, dog. Like, what? Chris McCaffrey will clear you any day of the week. Like, do people actually think before they tweet now? They just get on X and say anything nowadays. Rashard Mendenhall, you're crazy if you think that you're a GOAT over Christian McCaffrey. Like, what? Come on, man. There's no way you can ever believe that you were anywhere as close to as good as a back as what Christian McCaffrey is. This dude may be the most talented running back in the history of the league. He can do it all. Catch, break tackles, really elusive in the open field. Like, what can't this dude do? Like, Rashad Mendenhall, you tripping with that tweet. You better play. You better enjoy retirement and give credit where credit's due to Christian McCaffrey. Like, this is probably the greatest white football player ever. And I don't mean that to be racist, but I'm just being honest, bro. Who else has been just as good as Christian McCaffrey, at least on offense? And lastly, I got Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill, here's the thing with him. He's a wide receiver, and he's had some great numbers, and people believe if he gets the 2,000 yards, he can get the award. I got to see him have a good game against Dallas. He needs to ball out. My problem with Tyreek Hill is that he has yet to really have a monster performance against a great team. And the Dolphins haven't been a great team yet, which is what makes this Cowboys-Dolphins game so interesting. And he's going to have a little bit of a stretch to prove himself also, because they got to play the Cowboys coming up. Then next week, they got to play Lamar and the Ravens. Then they end the season playing the Buffalo Bills. If he can have like 150-yard performances with a couple of touchdowns in those games, then he has a great chance of winning it too, especially if he gets to 2,000. You know, anytime you talk about Mike Tomlin and his job security and what his future holds with the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's always a really polarizing conversation. And the thing with the people who defend Mike Tomlin, who feel he shouldn't go, their strongest argument for the Steelers not moving on from him is that he's never had a losing season. And here's my take on this. I truthfully believe that Mike Tomlin is a really good football coach. But Andy Reid was a really good football coach. And Philadelphia fired him. Worked out for both parties. Tony Dungy was a really good football coach. Got fired by the Buccaneers, and it worked out for both parties. He won the Super Bowl with the Colts, and they hired John Gruden, and he won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay in his first season. Just because a guy has a lot of success and he's never had a winning season doesn't mean that his job should ever be safe when the standard has went down under him. The Steelers, back in 2008, when I first became a fan of this team, the standard was competing for championships every single season. And ever since 2010, when they lost to the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl, this team hasn't had that same level of championship play that they had in the early years of Mike Tomlin. And I'm not saying that he's an overrated coach because he won with Cowboys guys. Like, the dude went to a Super Bowl in 2010 with some of his guys, and he did get to an AFC championship in the past decade. But the thing with the Steelers now is that over the last couple of years, this team has had slightly above average to bad quarterback play. Not only stay slightly above average because of Big Ben before he retired, but once he hung up the cleats, it's been downhill ever since. And you see, for the people who defend Mike Tomlin, I ask you this. How much are you a Steelers fan? Because if you really are a diehard Steelers fan like me, you mean to tell me that your standard with what a good season is for the black and gold franchise, one of the most historically known franchises, not just in the NFL, but in the history of sports, which one time used to have a championship pedigree, should be okay and tolerate 9-8 seasons and occasionally making it into the playoffs just to get our ass kicked in the first round by the Cleveland Browns, Baker Mayfield with the interim head coach, Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette off a first round bye at home? Losing to Tim Tebow in overtime? This is what the new standard is in Pittsburgh now? This is what is acceptable? This dude hasn't won a playoff game in 7 years. And you know, people's whole excuse for keeping Mike Tomlin is, well, it's not his fault he got bad quarterback play. I'm not trying to insult anybody, and we really don't know what goes on behind the closed doors of these franchises, but there's no way you can tell me Mike Tomlin, with all the years that he spent with this franchise, didn't have a say in who was going to be the replacement for a future first ballot Hall of Famer. You got to be really naive to think Mike Tomlin didn't have a say in greenlighting them signing Mitchell Trubisky. If that isn't evidence enough, look at his decision to keep playing Mitchell Trubisky this season, despite how bad he was. Not until late, once the game was over against Indianapolis, he took out Mitch Trubisky. And before that game, you know, the announcers, they talk to Mike Tomlin when they do their little interviews, production interviews leading up to the game. And you know what Mike Tomlin told them? He told them that he has remained with Mitchell Trubisky as a starter with Kenny Pickett dealing with an injury because Trubisky has experience being the franchise quarterback. Like, huh? When has Mitch Trubisky ever looked like a franchise quarterback, Mike Tomlin? So if Mike Tomlin is saying crazy things about Mitchell Trubisky being a former franchise quarterback, it's pretty explainable his decision to draft Kenny Pickett. This dude doesn't have an eye for the quarterback position. He just doesn't. And with Pittsburgh now, when you got a head coach that doesn't have a good idea of how to find a franchise quarterback, you got to move on from him and get a head coach that can either specialize in the offense side of the football and have Kenny Pickett playing at a high level, or get a new head coach who's going to prioritize finding a franchise quarterback and somebody who can get the Pittsburgh Steelers back into the Super Bowl conversation. The Steelers have never had a losing season under Mike Tomlin. That's a big accomplishment. But you can't deny that this franchise right now, their car is stuck in the ditch and it's muddy and they're trying to back out, but they can't get out because they're stuck. Because the driver of the car doesn't know how to drive out of the ditch. And it seems like the longer Mike Tomlin remains the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, just the more the standard increases to decreases. Like, it used to be one of those franchises that always used to prioritize winning championships. But now, we just give a round of applause for going 9-8 every season. Participation trophies. Never having a losing season is a big accomplishment. But for Mike Tomlin, always having that in his back pocket as an excuse for his defenders to keep his job, it's now sounding like a participation trophy. Because the standard used to be so much more. And anytime the standard goes down for a head coach, you know what that means? It means that they're doing something wrong. They need to have a little bit of some change. Andy Reid needed change from Philadelphia. He never won a Super Bowl with Philadelphia. He goes to Kansas City, gets Patrick Mahomes, and he's won a couple of them now. A change of scenery wouldn't be bad for Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers. It worked out for Philadelphia. People keep saying, well, who are you going to replace Mike Tomlin with? It doesn't matter about who we're going to replace him with. All that matters is finding somebody with a different philosophy and a different idea when it comes to running this franchise. Because the way that Mike Tomlin is running this team obviously isn't resonating on the field, because they are the first team since, what, 1950 to lose to two of the worst teams in the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals and the New England Patriots. They suck, bruh. And the Steelers lost to them. And they got embarrassed by the Indianapolis Colts with Gardner Minshew. What are we doing here? Like, are we just okay with this now? Because I'm not. I would like to get back to a Super Bowl. I don't want to keep seeing Mitchell Trubisky and Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett at quarterback. The Steelers are one of the most popular franchises in sports. They need a better quarterback out there. You have Big Ben, a Hall of Famer. Imagine going from him to this garbage that they want to throw out on the field and Mitchell Trubisky. What an embarrassment. You know, like, Mike Tomlin, if he was to go to the Chargers, that would be a perfect landing spot for him, because he'll have a franchise quarterback in Justin Herbert. And as long as Mike Tomlin has that, he can win you a Super Bowl. But he doesn't know how to find that. And that's why he has to go. You know, the Carolina Panthers got their second win of the season in front of their home crowd, but barely anybody showed up in the crowd. And they only sold a limited amount of tickets. And their ticket prices were so low that you could get into this game only paying $3 reportedly. And there was only 5,000 and something fans that even showed up for this game. Now, the reasoning is pretty obvious. Who wants to go support a shit football team in terrible weather conditions. I wouldn't go support this team. The head coach got fired. Their first round pick, who they traded the farm up to get, hasn't looked good. And what is there to even root for anymore? At this point, you just are rooting for the season to be over with so you can get a new head coach in there and then have a reason to be optimistic for next year. So, of course, the fans weren't going to go watch this clown show, even though they won against the Atlanta Falcons. But they're a clown show, too, because they still choose to throw out Desmond Ridder and believe that he has what it takes to be a franchise quarterback. And he pretty much helped you and gifted you a little bit of an early Christmas present with that interception that he threw inside of the red zone, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, like, who's surprised that the Carolina Panthers are having low attendance numbers and they're selling tickets for $3? Like, of course. Why waste your time Saturday or Sunday afternoon to watch a team in bad weather have a good chance of probably losing? Like, yeah, they won this game, but why does it even matter at this point? The season is over. What are they playing for? They're playing for pride and respect under an interim head coach where they're trying to figure out who their new head coach is going to be and who's going to be able to help Bryce Young play at the level that was expected out of him when the Panthers gave up so much to get him. And I mean, who wants to see the Falcons anyway? There's no player on the Falcons that anybody will really be drawn to have to go see. Maybe if you was playing the Ravens, you probably would have a couple of more fans in the stands because everybody loves Lamar and OBJ. But of course, nobody wants to go see this terrible product that David Tepper has put out on the field, man. The attendance numbers for Carolina, I'm surprised that they haven't been even lower. I'm surprised even 5,000 people showed up. I thought only 100 people showed up with the way that the videos were looking, that people were posting on social media who went to this thing. They could barely sell concessions. Concessions. Like, the Carolina Panthers, man, they better make sure that they get a grand slam hire at head coach. Because if they don't, this fan base, I mean, it's only going to get more downhill from here. David Tepper, his next head coach, needs to be offensive-minded. And you definitely need to make sure that this dude has what it takes to have Bryce Young playing at a first overall pick kind of level. Because if not, this franchise is going to continue to bottom out. And they're going to be one of the worst franchises in the NFL. The Panthers, people seem to forget that they had some good moments with Ron Rivera and Cam Newton. They went to a Super Bowl. They won a couple of division titles. They won a few playoff games. There was a reason to be optimistic when Cam Newton was playing at quarterback for this franchise at his peak. Hasn't been a reason to be optimistic ever since he got released the first time. And you brought him back a couple of years ago to try to bring back a little bit of that energy. But after that one game against Arizona, there was nothing else to be able to root for. And you haven't had nothing to root for ever since. And you haven't really had a reason to be optimistic outside of Bryce Young and what you thought he might have been this season. And it's unfortunate that you see C.J. Stroud having the success that he's had this season with Houston. You're like, damn, like, we should have took him. Or even Anthony Richardson. These fans are disappointed. Their souls have been ripped out of their body. Like, they're probably fans now who probably don't even care about watching a single game for the rest of this season. Unless they just have nothing else to do. If fans don't want to show up to these games, who can blame them? David Tepper has given them an awful product. DeMonte Casey got suspended for the rest of the season for a hit that he laid out against Michael Pittman when they were playing the Colts this past Saturday. And the NFL has turned really soft. Really soft. You can't blame DeMonte Casey for that hit. What do you want the deuce to do anymore? You can't even play defense in the National Football League anymore. And Tom Brady came out and spoke out against this suspension and said that it's not DeMonte Casey's fault. What do you want these defensive players to do? Blame the quarterback. Blame Gardner Minshew for throwing that pass that set Michael Pittman up for that hit. As a quarterback, you're not supposed to put your receivers in harm's way. That's why you're supposed to throw them open, away from harm's way, Gardner Minshew. Come on, man. The NFL isn't even the NFL anymore. They trying to make this thing two-hand touching. It used to be a laughing joke, but at this point, it really could be. They're about to ban the hit drop tackle. Like, I get trying to promote player safety, because these players, once they retire, they've been suing the hell out of the NFL, and they've been losing a lot of money in these lawsuits, and you have all these new CTE findings coming out, and you go on Antonio Brown's Twitter every day, and you see what he's tweeting, and you're like, yeah, like, you understand why the NFL needs to make these games safer, but at the same time, you gotta understand what you're walking into when you're a player who suits up to play football. Even going back to when your parents first signed you up to play Pop Warner. This is a violent sport. You can get hurt, possibly killed playing this game. You can only make this game so safe without removing what makes American football American football. That's the physicality, people. It's a brutal sport. It's a gladiator sport. Do you know how crazy you gotta be to go out for 60 minutes every Sunday, running around, trying to knock somebody's head off and trying to score, avoiding getting your head knocked off your helmet or knocked off your shoulders? Like, come on, bro. You got to be a little crazy to play the game of football. Look at some of the characters that we've had over the years. Ray Lewis. I told one of my friends a couple of days ago, if Ray Lewis was playing in this era of the NFL right now in the year 2023, this dude would have got ejected and fined in nearly every single game that he would have played in this era, bro, because you can't play defense with intensity anymore. They want you to softly wrap these players up, and they don't want you to hit them too hard. You can't even sack the quarterback anymore. You sack the quarterback the wrong way, it's a flag. And you wonder why offensive coaches are starting to dominate this league. You see, when you used to actually be able to play defense back in the 80s and 90s, yeah, that's why defensive coaches were winning a lot. But these offensive coaches are having success because you can't play defense. You can't cover nobody no more. You just slightly pull somebody as pass interference. You can't really tackle nobody a certain way anymore. You can't sack the quarterback. It's like, damn, what can you do on defense? No wonder the offenses are now starting to dominate, and these random quarterbacks like Tommy DeVito and Jake Browning are coming out of nowhere having success. Look how easy it is to have success on offense. If your offense sucks, then whoever is calling the plays needs to be fired immediately, because it is too easy now to play offense in the NFL. You see, Tom Brady, y'all can call him soft all you want to. This dude played in the NFL when, you know, there was never really such a thing as roughing the passer. You see, back when Tom Brady first entered the league, it was a different game. You know, some of the hits that he was taking back then are not the same hits that he took during the later stage of his career. And that's why I love when Tom Brady always speaks out on these things. Because you're looking at a player that played in two of the different generations of the NFL, the soft era of defense and the hard notes physical era of defense. You see, now you look at the league, and half of the players that dominated in the earlier eras of the NFL, the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, they would not have been able to survive in the current era of what the NFL is right now. Defense is pretty much hard to play anymore. If you have a great defense, you got to cherish that shit, man, because that's rare. You can't even breathe on these receivers. DeMonte Casey, it's like the hit was a little bit unnecessary. He probably could have made a play for the ball, but these players are going 100 miles per hour. You know, you got to make decisions at a split second. And most of the times, you don't even have time to think. You just got to react. And I'm pretty sure he didn't mean to hit Michael Pittman in a way that was going to put him on a stretcher. But these defenders, they're not worried about player safety when they play. They're worried about trying to make a play, trying to make enough plays where they can show enough on film and keep a job that can provide for their families. So the fact that DeMonte Casey is suspended for the rest of the season due to this hit on Michael Pittman, it just makes me more a little bit afraid of what is going to be the future of this game? Because what has made this game what it is today, the most popular sport in America, is its physicality, its violent nature. This is not a game that's meant to be safe. You're going to have injuries. That's part of the game. When you lose your backup quarterback, when you lose your starting quarterback and you lose your backup quarterback like how the 49ers did in the NFC Championship, that's part of the game. injuries come with it. Hell, the game used to be a lot more violent back in the 80s and 70s. Like, I had a head coach in middle school who used to play for the Chicago Bears, and he was on one of those Super Bowl winning teams with one of those great defenses. And he told me how back then they didn't have all that padding in their helmet. You know what they had? They had little small little strings, and they used to call them headache boxes. Now, I don't know why those old school coaches who used to play football back then be bragging about all that stuff, because playing through CTE, I don't think that's anything to brag about, anything to really praise for being able to play through. But the game is a lot safer now than what it ever has been. And you can only continue to water down this product so much without taking away what makes the sport the sport. Anytime you bring up Justin Fields' future with the Chicago Bears, should they trade him? Should they build around him? There's always a lot of back and forth. And Justin Fields, to me, he's not a bad quarterback. He definitely is a starter in this league, although not really a very good one, but one that has a lot of potential. And after the Bears lost to the Browns, they asked DJ Moore about Justin Fields' future. And he said, bro, like, stop asking me about Justin Fields pretty much. He was like, I like Justin Fields, and I think he's a pretty good quarterback. And when I watch him play, he's not a good quarterback in my eyes. But that is DJ Moore's teammate, so of course he's going to say that. But I do see a quarterback that has shown the potential to be an MVP caliber QB in this league. It's just that he's really inconsistent. And when he's on, but when he's off, he's really bad. And he hasn't won a lot of games as a starting quarterback. And when you get drafted in the first round, the expectation is that you're able to overcome some level of dysfunction. All right, and Justin Fields, for him to need all these weapons and need all these things to go in his favor for him to have success, you know, it kind of just further amplifies the reason why the Bears should just trade him and start over with Caleb Williams. You see, Caleb Williams right now will be a better quarterback than what Justin Fields is. He's better at reading the field, and he's more accurate. And before you hit me with that, man, you never played a single down in the NFL. If you watch the certain throws that Caleb Williams makes, they translate to the NFL. When you can throw receivers open with anticipation and you can read defenses in college, that translates in the NFL. Justin Fields wasn't as good as a prospect coming out of Ohio State as what Caleb Williams was. Plus, you get the restart with the rookie quarterback, and then you can still continue to build your team up. You're going to have cap space. It's not like you can't sign players in free agency. Why do people think that the only way to build your team up is through the draft? Like, drafting Caleb Williams doesn't mean that they can't sign nobody in free agency. And you can even get maybe a second-round pick in return for Justin Fields. It's not that the dude is terrible. He's just inconsistent. And if you can give him to the right organization with the head coach that can know what to do with him, then he could potentially be a top 10 quarterback. The problem is that Chicago, I don't believe that, honestly, they know what the hell to do with Justin Fields. They don't know how to fully use this guy's skill set. They try to make this dude something that he's not. He's not a pocket passer. They should allow this dude to run the football more. We need more quarterback powers and QB counters with Justin Fields. The dude is damn near a running back when he's in the open field. There's not a lot of defensive backs that are trying to tackle him. He's like 220-something pounds. You think any cornerbacks nowadays want to try to tackle that? They don't even want to tackle Anthony Richardson, man. Let that boy Justin Fields go and be Justin Fields. But I don't ever believe that Justin Fields is ever going to have that luxury. Luke Getsy is an awful play caller. Awful, awful. This dude doesn't know how to use Justin Fields. I'd rather see Justin Fields go to Atlanta with Arthur Smith. But Arthur Smith, even though he may not know how to use Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, and Drake London, he should at least know how to use Justin Fields. Hell, you give him to Kevin O'Connell? Oh my goodness. Ain't no telling what Kevin O'Connell will be able to do with a guy like Justin Fields, man. Justin Fields isn't one of those quarterbacks that you can just plug into every offense. But with a good offensive mind, he can build an offense around what Justin Fields does well. You see, Luke Getsy and company, they don't know how to use this dude, which is why they need to start over and get a quarterback who can make things a lot more easier on them. And if they get rid of Matt Eberflus, if you're a new head coach, why would you want to bank your future on Justin Fields? He's not a dude who you drafted. And you got to remember that the majority of quarterbacks that have been bust the past decade, like Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, they have to overcome numerous coaching staff changes. Marcus Mariota had two head coaches, Mike Vrabel, Mike Mularkey, and nearly a new OC every damn season. Jameis Winston had three head coaches. When you don't have stability on the coaching staff, it ruins a young quarterback's development. The only QB in recent memory that's been able to overcome instability on the coaching staff has been Justin Herbert. And even then, this season, he had a down season relative to what we've seen out of him in previous years. Justin Fields needs a fresh start. If I'm a new head coach and I take this Bears job, I'd rather get Drake May or Caleb Williams. I don't want to try to make something out of a quarterback that I don't really know what I'm going to get. And if I'm a head coach and I got to take extra time to build an offense around this dude, why do that when I can just draft somebody who easier fits what I want to do offensively? And that's the reality that Bears fans don't want to admit about this situation. It's a lot harder to win with a guy like Justin Fields that has his kind of struggles than it is to win with him if you don't really have a great offensive-minded coach. Justin Fields, I think he's one of the most talented players in the league. He got voted in the top 100 for a reason. And he's my favorite player in the league right now. Why do you think he's my YouTube cover photo? I love Justin Fields. He won me my fantasy league worth $300 back in 2022 with how he played in fantasy football. So I got a lot of admiration for Justin Fields, and I watched him when he was playing in high school. He was on a Quarterback One documentary. If you've never seen QB1, go on Netflix. I think it's on Netflix, and look up QB1 Beyond the Lights and go look at the season that Justin Fields was featured in. I like Justin Fields, and the players like him too, but Chicago just doesn't know how to use this dude, and it's not looking really good for him. He got outplayed by Joe Flacco. When you're a first-round quarterback, you should not be getting outplayed by somebody's grandpa, man. Joe Flacco, my nickname for him is Grandpa Flacco. He threw three interceptions and the Bears still lost the game. That's unacceptable. Justin Fields needs a fresh start. Now, I'm not saying that Justin Fields is this great quarterback, but I do believe that he is at least a low-end starter, at least right now. Not because he's not talented, because you don't really know if there's going to be the right head coach who can put it all together with him. And Chicago is just would be an extra hassle to hire a new head coach if you're him and try to figure out a way to make it work when you can just draft somebody who just is a better fit for your system. You can't make a quarterback fit in your offense if he doesn't fit what you want to do schematically. If he's not a drop-back passer that can throw the football 35 times a game by breaking down and analyzing and dissecting defenses, then you can't ask him to ever become that. So I think Chicago should move on from Justin Fields, start over again, especially if you're going to start over at head coach. And if you're Matt Eberflus, if you get another year and you can fire Luke Getsy, why not go ahead and move on from Justin Fields and just try to start over? It would make things a lot easier for you. You're a defensive-minded coach anyway. You don't need the kind of quarterback that Justin Fields is that requires all these special tweaks and, you know, adaptations to the offense for. You need to hire your offensive coordinator, get you a new quarterback, draft one, either Caleb Williams or Drake May. Either one will suffice. And, you know, maybe get a Malik Nabers in the draft or Roma Dunze, and you're rolling. Oh, well, we need offensive line, bro. You can get offensive line in free agency. Like, damn, why do people forget about free agency? Is the draft the only way to address your team? So, Justin Fields, I'm hoping for the best for your brother. I want to see you out of the Windy City. I would love to see you in Atlanta. And I wouldn't mind you being a quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll definitely take you over Trubisky, Mason Rudolph, and definitely Kenny Pickett. Jalen Milroe is a quarterback that Michigan has not seen this year. He has been playing some really high-level football ever since he got benched against Texas. He came back in that game after they nearly lost to USF, and he's gotten better every single week. And with his athleticism and how well he throws the deep ball and his ability to improvise and play make, it's going to be a tough challenge for Michigan's defense being able to slow him down. He's one of those quarterbacks that if he gets hot, he can take over the game and he can cause you to lose a game like this. And with the way that he played against Georgia, Georgia's defense has played really well. People try to knock Georgia's defense saying that, well, their defense hasn't been good as previous years. Okay, duh. But it still doesn't mean that their defense wasn't one of the best in college football. Jalen Milroe against this Michigan front is going to be really intriguing to see how they're going to game plan for him. Because you're going to have to maybe leave a couple of players into as a quarterback spy to try to make sure that you can keep him inside the pocket or you can keep him from breaking the big play with his legs. And not every school has the kind of athletes to be capable of being able to hold a guy like Jalen Milroe. And this dude has a similar playing style to Lamar Jackson in a sense. Not completely like Lamar, but ideally similar. He's really dynamic when he has the ball in his hands and he turns into a running back once he gets out and past the line of scrimmage. Michigan, they haven't seen a quarterback like this all this year. So how are they going to be able to practice for this? Now, they do have a dude named Orji, I believe, number 10. They probably have him running the scout team, trying to get a look on Jalen Milroe. And he's a little bit of a specimen himself. Good God. But Jalen Milroe, this dude is special. And he's not a crazy efficient passer. So if you can find a way to keep him from making those big plays outside of the pocket, and you force him to become a drop back passer like how Texas did, and you limit the impact that he has on the ground game for Bama, then you can neutralize him. And then that's where he can struggle, because it's not like he had a crazy performance through the air against Georgia. He made a couple of big throws and he had a couple of good plays when he was improvising and buying time for receivers to get open. But he's not really that great of a passer right now in this stage of his career. But when he has the chance to show you that he's a great dual threat quarterback, he's going to kill you. In Michigan, you can't allow that. A guy like Jalen Milroe with this kind of athleticism, you think that you have him down on 3rd and 5, all of a sudden he breaks out of 2 tackles and he picks up the first down. Dudes like him are really annoying to go up against, because anytime you got that team down and out and you're about to get your offense back on the field, they find a way to make a play to keep the drive alive. It's really annoying and it's really pesky when you got to go up against a quarterback that has this really intriguing skill set that Jalen Milroe has. And what's really impressive is how well he throws the deep ball. He has a great arm. He has a cannon, actually. And he throws the deep ball better than he throws at any other area of the field, short or medium. It's really weird. This dude is a really fascinating quarterback. Really fascinating quarterback. And Jim Harbaugh and this defensive staff, they're going to have their hands full trying to figure out how to stop this dude if they can't find a way to keep him in the pocket. You see, Georgia has crazy athletes. Crazy athletes. You can put a linebacker or a defensive lineman or two on the quarterback spy assignment, and maybe that could work. But does Michigan have the kind of athletes to do that defensively? We'll see, but it's going to be really challenging for this Michigan defense and how they got a game plan for Jalen Milroe's game-changing ability. Lane Kiffin is absolutely killing it at Ole Miss in the transfer portal. I believe, bold prediction for 2024, Ole Miss is going to win the SEC next year. Record it, mark it down, book it, and come back to it around this time in 2024 so you can tell me I was right. Because the way they've been building this program through the portal, they got the number one transfer portal class right now. And they had the third ranked transfer portal class last year in 2022? And the same approach that Lane Kiffin is taking right now at Ole Miss, it's the same approach that we saw Mike Norvell take the last couple of years with how he's used the portal. And you see, you just can't build a great team just by getting all of your players on your roster through the portal. You got to get a couple of guys here or there. You got to get a few graduate transfers. Then you got to get a couple of transfers that still have 3-4 years left of eligibility. Get those guys in and develop them and mix them in with guys that you bring in from your recruiting classes. That's what FSU did. And that's what Ole Miss is doing right now with Lane Kiffin. They got Jaxson Dart from the portal. Quinshon Judkins they got from recruiting. And you look at the players that they have in this portal cycle right now, they're overhauling that defense. Pete Golding, you know, his defense was Swiss cheese this year. When they beat LSU, I never saw Lane Kiffin look so nervous in the game. That dude was stressed the hell out. He was praying to the football gods that his defense was going to be able to come away with a stop. Now, one of their biggest additions on the defense was definitely Tyler Barron, second-ranked defensive end in the portal out of Tennessee. You also got another Tennessee transfer, and Tamarion McDonald out of Tennessee. He has started several years for the Vols. He has a total of 115 career tackles, 12 pass breakups, and 4 interceptions. And then you got my guy, Tavion Tass Nicholson, who I went to high school with. We're going to have him on the channel really soon. He has been a 2-year starter previously for Illinois. Really aggressive and really physical corner. Pete Golden is going to love Tass because he's one of those cornerbacks that has no problem going out there and trying to lay a hit and actually putting his body on the line to tackle. A lot of these new age corners now, they don't like tackling. They're ankle biters. My guy Tass, he's going to be one of the biggest impactful transfer portal acquisitions out of the whole entire SEC next season. Like, he's a dog. Y'all need to make sure that you write that name down, Tass Nicholson. He comes from Jacksonville. We're different down here. 904, let's go. They got another defensive end out of Florida who I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, but he has 7 sacks. I believe he was all SEC selection. And they got Chris Paul Jr., who was the second-ranked linebacker in the transfer portal, according to 247 Sports. This past season for Arkansas, he had 74 tackles, and he had 2 sacks. This is an Ole Miss team that's going to be drastically improved and revamped defensively. It's all going to come down to the play-calling ability of Pete Golden being able to utilize these players' talents and put them in the right position to succeed. Because they already have one of the best offenses in college football. This offensive line is going to be better. The wide receiving core is going to be just as good as any other team in college football next season. You got a proven quarterback in Jackson Dart. All is going to come down to execution and player development. And if Lane Kiffin and Pete Golden are going to be able to put everything together for it to work. And then I can't forget about what they got on the offense side of football. They got Juice Wells. Did I really let Lane Kiffin get his hands on Juice Wells? What kind of money do they got down there in Oxford, Mississippi? Because I might need to go take a little bit of a trip down there in a while to see what's cooking down there at Ole Miss. Like, Ole Miss, they got something special brewing down there, and they're going to explode in 2024. We're going to be talking a lot more about the Rebels over the course of this offseason, but this is a team that definitely is going to be top 5 in my top 25 preseason poll when I release it in a couple of weeks, because they're stacked, and I don't think enough people have been paying attention to what Lane Kiffin is doing down there.